We are so delighted that you have chosen to get up with us.
Nobody knows what the guaranteed dollars for Dak Prescott is.
This ain't normal.
It don't make no damn sense, Greeny.
Bold.
Jimmy Garoppolo got $72.5 million guaranteed.
Preach.
We know what Aaron Rodgers got guaranteed.
Preach, Stephen A.
What's the number?
This week is not going to be fun.
Greeny, you won, and it was a landslide.
Carry on, Mr. Greeny, because I've been missing. Your affinity for Carson Wentz legitimately has you blind right now.
We should all decline the way Aaron Rodgers has declined.
What?
Dan has been disrobing. I'm not taking off any clothing whatsoever to make my case.
Let's see some abs.
Dom?
You guys keep your shirts on.
I'm appalled at you, Jalen Rose.
Smell appalled.
APPALLED.
Wrong.
Been a lot of fun here this week, and we thank you for getting up with us. And we'll be here every single morning through this and beyond as we get through all this together. And this weekend, we've actually got a lot of great sports to look forward to, including this, the third UFC event in Jacksonville this week. It's available on ESPN and the ESPN app. Alistair Overeem taking on Walt Harris tomorrow in the heavyweight main event. The main card will start at 9 Eastern with a great prelim card that starts at 6. And with that, again, we're going to start up a new hour here, and we thank you so much for spending your morning with us. We're going to have the head football coach at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, going to join us live in just a couple of minutes. He had some very strong thoughts yesterday on a day where it felt like there was a lot of optimism about the start of the college football season. He threw some significant words of caution into the mix, and you'll want to hear what he has to say as he joins us live in just a moment. We will do that as we start a new hour of Get Up right now. It's time to Get Up with College Football. Huge reaction to a phone call leaves everyone pointing in one direction. You'll hear what that direction is. And again, Lincoln Riley right off the top. Then, sports are back this weekend. Actually, a full plate of live action. And Mike Tirico in this hour will help us get ready. And then, baseball's players taking a public stand that could threaten the chances of a season. Are they right? Or is it the biggest mistake they've ever made? We'll answer all those questions in this hour as we get up with you on ESPN. Starts with Get Up and Go. NBA players will receive their first salary reduction today, with more than $30 million being withheld from player paychecks. However, 5 of the league's top 10 earners, including LeBron James, have already been paid in full, so they'll see the reductions come out of their salaries next year. NASCAR now has 20 races on their schedule after announcing June events in Tennessee, Georgia, Virginia, Florida, and Alabama. The Cup Series is scheduled to resume this Sunday at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. University of Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland says that school is open to hosting events for professional teams that are looking for a way to play during the pandemic. Florida opened the state for pro sports on Wednesday, so that is certainly something to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, SEC presidents and chancellors are set to vote next Friday on whether to allow their schools to open for athletic facilities in June for voluntary workouts. All activities are currently suspended due to the pandemic. And so all that brings us to this. The Power Five commissioners recently held a conference call with that man, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, to glean some insight from the league on how to handle the pandemic. Here's ACC Commissioner John Swofford on the current status of the college football season.
I would emphasize that we are going into this year with the anticipation of playing at this point in time. Most all of our institutions are indicating that they intend to open in various fashions as we go into the fall. But there's a lot that can happen in between now and then.
Okay, so lots of conversation to be had here. Paul Feinbaum, Laura Rutledge, Bobby Carpenter join us. And again, we will have Lincoln Riley live in just a moment. But Laura, why did the Power Five commissioners and others emerge so optimistic in general after their conversation with Goodell?
Well, I think what it did was just reinforce some things that the Power Five commissioners were already talking about doing, Greeny, and hearing from the NFL side of this that has been so consistent throughout about what their plans would be, reinforced what the Power Five commissioners were already saying they were going to try and do. And I think it just gave them a little bit more ability to look at the timeline and to look at how testing procedures might be in place, to sort of throw around some of those ideas with the NFL guidance that Roger Goodell was able to provide. Left a lot of optimism amongst these Power 5 commissioners who have been at the forefront of feeling optimistic about having a college football season in the fall, even if it had to be slightly delayed, maybe even starting on time. They're still targeting that and have continued to target that. This only reinforced their belief that they can pull that off.
Paul, what do you think the college football commissioners and everyone around the sport can learn from the NFL?
To speak with one voice, Roger Goodell has never wavered. He's had the same message every time you've heard from him, which quite frankly isn't very often. In college football, the story changes every day, Grinny. It's like watching the Dow Jones. It's up, it's down, it's here, it's there. One day, no football without students on campus. Then the commissioners come out and say, well, maybe if students take it online. They just don't have a consistent message. College football is an absolute dumpster fire right now in terms of getting a message out.
So how do they solve that problem, Paul? What can be done? We've been having this, maybe not saying it quite as strongly as you just did, but generally we've been having that conversation since this began. What can change?
Right now, nothing can change because they're trying to, it's like trying to catch a train from behind. College football doesn't have a commissioner. The NFL does. 32 people report, well, not really, Roger Goodell reports to 32 owners. But in this case, you have fiefdoms all over the country. The autonomy five, power five commissioners are supposedly in charge. But then what happens if California shuts down? Then you lose part of that. I mean, it is chaos. Now, in fairness, the commissioners are trying to coalesce. They're trying to come up with a plan. But right now, they still don't have one.
You know, and Bobby, what I find myself thinking as we're having this conversation is that at a time when Major League Baseball is sitting here very publicly airing a fight over money in the middle of a pandemic, and college football, to Paul's point, sort of can't figure out in which direction it wants to run, the NFL has, they from the very beginning, said, we're going to go about business as usual and done it. I think Goodell deserves a lot of credit for the way he's handled this.
It pains me to say it, but Roger Goodell does deserve a lot of credit, and so does the NFL with how they've operated. And so it makes perfect sense. Everybody wants a commissioner of college football, of college, you know, high-level college football. So you go to Roger Goodell. What he's able to give them is the plans, the testing, the operations of how they're proceeding. And like Paul said, consistent messaging. Because when these ADs and these commissioners go back, they have to pitch these plans to their board of trustees, to their presidents, heck, even the governor. And this is what I think the NFL and Roger Goodell is trying to do, is help them along, give them some of these things, give them the certainty of saying, hey, this is what we're doing. Present this plan. It's a good plan. There will be some bumps. There'll be some hiccups, but we're going to be able to move forward in this direction. And you can do it just like we have done for the last 2 or 3 months.
All right, that's really well said. And again, it's an interesting place that they find themselves. Now, we have been trying to get in touch with as many of the big coaches from college football as we can over the course of these weeks to get their perspective on all of this. And we're delighted to welcome in now the head coach at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley. Coach, thank you very much for taking a moment here. And we played a soundbite from you earlier this morning in which you said that if we do this right, we will have a season. So what does doing it right, Coach, look like to you?
Well, I think the first decision is, when do we bring these players in? And as I stated yesterday, I think we have to be very patient. And listen, this has nothing to do, or very little to do, with actually putting them in a weight room or workout facility. Sure, we can put, you know, 10 guys in a facility, social distance them, sanitize it, and make it safe. That's not the point. The point is, if we have them for 2 hours a day in a workout facility, what are they doing the other 22 hours a day? You know, we cannot control, you know, hundreds of guys, or, you know, over 100 players for that amount of time and know exactly what they're going to do. You know, these guys are 18 to 22 years old. They're going to socialize. They're going to want to be around each other. They're going to want to be around their peers. And that makes it dangerous, not only for our players, but also for our staff, because our staff obviously doesn't fall in that 18 to 22 year old range, and you've got a lot of staff members that are at a more susceptible age range. And so this takes a lot of people to get it done. We're constantly learning more and more about this virus, and why we would not advantage our time is beyond me. You know, and the other, you know, some of the arguments are, well, we can provide better care for here, and that's not true. There's an NCAA interpretation right now that we can actually provide medical care to our players no matter where they're at. We've provided a lot of medical care to our players in different cities and different states across the country with relative ease. And I just think as soon as we get them all back together, you know, we create potentially, you know, dangerous situation. And listen, we're going to have to do it at some point if we're going to try to have a season. I get that. But why we would not advantage our time and get as ready and educated as possible to me is the biggest issue.
Coach, Laura Rutledge here with Greeny as well. And I just want to get your take on the plans that are in place for testing. What have you heard about how that might look for you guys?
Yeah, we've had some really good discussions, Laura, about that. You know, testing, you know, when you enter the facility, trying to keep guys in the facility until it's, you know, time to leave for the day, both for staff and for players. You know, I think we've heard everything from, you know, swab testing to thermal sensors, you name it, it's been discussed. And there's definitely preparations ongoing, but I know all these schools are working on them, and we're all eager to get our guys back. I mean, we want our players back yesterday. We can't wait to see them. We can't wait to get back to work and get ready for the season. But there's just bigger things right now, and the testing is obviously a huge part of that.
Yeah, and Coach, you mentioned the medical care that you're able to provide to your players even from a distance. But let's say when you do get them all back, a player tests positive. What happens then?
Well, there's gonna be some type of quarantine policy, and different schools are looking at how they would do that in different facilities. You know, we do have, I think we're gonna have the ability to make that work, but then the question then becomes is who else have they been around? You know, and how do you accurately gauge that? And that's one of the challenges with college kids. You know, it's not like, you know, an NFL player that goes home with their family and they're there and that's it. This is much different. And a lot of these guys, especially your younger players, are in, you know, all the same facility as far as living. And so just the who all would be exposed, who all you would have to quarantine is a tricky question that I think a lot of schools and a lot of the medical personnel are working through right now.
Coach, among the many challenges, and you're pointing out some of them, is that not everyone is in the same circumstance. So what are your thoughts about some schools playing football this fall while others can't, be it because of state restrictions or other reasons?
Well, I think we've got to examine every possible avenue to allow everybody to play. And if there's a chance for everybody to play, regardless of when that season is, of what it looks like, then I think that's where we got to go full speed ahead. And then if we get to a point where that's not realistic, then – in my opinion, some football is better than no football. And so certainly hope we can get to that place, you know, where everybody can play. I think everybody wants that. But, you know, if it has to be done without a school or two, again, my opinion is, and not that my opinion matters a whole lot on that, but my opinion is that some football is definitely better than none.
I think your opinion matters a lot. Listen, Coach, on behalf of Laura and the show and me and everybody, thanks a million for doing this. Have a good weekend, and let's stay in touch as we work our way towards this, okay? Thanks very much for doing this morning.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Now, there he is, Lincoln Riley, head coach at Oklahoma, with interesting words as we look ahead to the hope that we will have a college football season. Meanwhile, as we look ahead to this weekend, we know we're going to get sports. Rory tees it up next weekend. Phil and Tiger come up. How different will it all be? Mike Tirico will join me coming up in just a moment to talk about it. And then, if you haven't heard what Steeler legend James Harrison said yesterday about his former coach, you're going to, and why it is so important. All that and more in this hour. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and if you're a sports fan, This should be a good weekend. We've got sports. We have the German Bundesliga becoming Europe's first major soccer league to resume play with 9 matches remaining for most of the teams. Then, for the third time in 8 days, Jacksonville, Florida, a UFC event Saturday. The event headlined by top 10 ranked heavyweights Alistair Overeem and Walt Harris. Sunday, the return of NASCAR's 3 major touring series at Darlington Raceway, starting with the Cup Series. NASCAR will run 7 races in 11 days. And then also Sunday, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, taking on Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff in a 2-on-2 skins match in the TaylorMade Driving Relief Competition at Seminole Golf Club. And the man who will be calling that action is good enough to spend some time with us here this morning. We are delighted to welcome in Mike Tirico, who is here on behalf of TaylorMade Driving Relief Charity Skins Match, which is also supported by United Health Group. And Mike, it is great to see you, and it'll be great to see golf coming up this weekend. What can we expect, those of us who love the game, what can we expect to see Saturday?
Yeah, Greeny, live golf. We miss it. Golf is one of the sports, along with NASCAR, that social distancing has a little bit of built-in. NASCAR, the guys over the wall have all the PPE already on, right, in their gloves and their helmets. And as we know, all 50 states now have some form of golf going on again. So people have been out playing. We're going to see the players not with caddies, but kind of taking care of their own golf bags, pulling their own clubs, using the lasers for yardage and distance, the Bushnell, to use the generic term for it. So it'll be exciting and different to see the players looking a lot like we look, except there's going to be a heck of a lot more money and better shots, too. North of $3 million towards COVID-19 relief in a couple of different charities. So, and to see Rory and Dustin Johnson on one team against Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff, who folks may not know the name, but you'll know him quick, 21 years old, Oklahoma State, already won on tour. It'll just be nice to see 4 of the best in the world actually competing at a golf course, Mike, that we don't see very often. Seminole's never been on TV. It's always in the top 15 of any ranking of world courses. So it'll be nice to get back to sports, that's for sure.
You ask almost anyone who has played most of the best courses in the world, and almost all of them will tell you Seminole is right at or near the top of their favorite. So we have good star power in golf this weekend, and then again next weekend. What are you expecting to see when Tiger and Peyton Manning take on Mickelson and Tom Brady?
Yeah, that'll be interesting, and I really don't care about Tiger and Phil, which is kind of the abnormal part for someone who covers and loves golf. I want to see how Peyton and Tom Brady, who we've seen multiple times in pro-ams, and we've seen them at Pebble Beach. We saw them do this in the Peyton Manning series that was so good over this year at Jim Nance's par 3 in his backyard at Pebble Beach. I want to see how those guys do under the heat of competition with Tiger and Phil. And the banter, as we saw in the press conference, Peyton had the needle out right away. And this week with the skins game with Rory and Dustin that we mentioned, and Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff. And then next week, having the guys mic'd, having done the old skins game in the past, that always adds to the enjoyment of an event. So it's for announcers, shut up, let them talk as much as possible, and enjoy hearing the banter that goes on between the golfers in that situation.
Yeah, so that's one of the many things that I'm very much looking forward to this weekend. While I have you, let me ask you about a few other things. Sure. The possibility of the NBA season resuming, and the notion that Shaquille O'Neal brought this up, I didn't agree with it, but it's out there, the idea that If they do finish a season and there is a champion, that champion will forever have an asterisk next to its name. What are your thoughts on those two notions in the NBA?
I mean, we talk strike season and asterisk teams in a variety of sports where there have been labor stoppages. So, of course, it's not the same as going through the regular 82 and then all the best of sevens. But I think a worthy champion will be crowned. And if that's the smallest thing that we are dealing with in the aftermath of an NBA season that finishes amidst a pandemic, so be it. I mean, this is not an asterisk. This is something that will impact our lives forever. We will be talking about this as one of the most horrific and significant events of our lives. So if there's an NBA champion and they didn't go through the pure 82 and then the playoffs, it doesn't matter to me. I think it's fine.
All right. You and I agree completely on that. Yeah. You and I also were both covering the NBA when Michael Jordan was playing in it. And I just wonder your impressions of what we've seen over these last month or so in Last Dance and your thoughts on what Michael Jordan's legacy is now. It's remarkable to me. I knew people would watch this. I had no idea it would become the cultural event that it has. Right. And so what does that say about Michael Jordan's legacy?
I think, and good for all my friends at ESPN, it is the perfect storm of timing with a captive audience desperate for something new. And one of the more mystical figures in sports, because for all we know of Michael and all the versions of Air Jordans and all the games and all the footage and all the post-game interviews, you know, Michael in retirement slash ownership, he hasn't been out there and talking very often. So to hear him talk about and reflect on these days has been just fascinating. And as you said, having covered some of those series, especially the back end of the three-peat, the second one for ESPN Radio, just to hear some of the stories behind, relive the games, those weekends, the events, the finals in Seattle, when Seattle came back and won those two games, and all of a sudden the Bulls looked old. It's taken us down memory lane. And Mike, I was thinking about this this morning. You know, a lot of us have gotten the chance to watch this with our kids, and anyone really under the age of 30 wasn't really aware of sports when that all this Jordan era happened. So they're able to see with their own eyes what we've been telling them for 20 years. No, this guy was different. He was amazing. He was groundbreaking. There's been no connection of corporate America and sports like Michael Jordan and Nike. So to see all of that come to life with all these figures, you know, some of us, your kids look at you and go, oh, you actually do make sense every once in a while. Right. So this has been a great trip down memory lane.
And my son hasn't had that reaction. He's had the opposite reaction, but that's a whole different conversation. But to the first point that you made in there, you know, Michael has been very protective of his image from the moment he stopped playing. I tell everyone he was very accessible while he was playing. Mm-hmm. Since then, he's been very quiet. I've been surprised by how unflinchingly honest he has been through this and the sides of himself he has allowed us to see. What has been your reaction to that?
Yeah, I'm same with you, Greeny. I kind of perk up when I see Michael sitting in the chair and the glass of scotch and the cigar and the whole deal. And I just want to hear what he has to say. Like, I would love to sit through those raw interviews for hours and hours because there's real depth. There's emotion. And you could see it when he gave that unbelievable 2.5 minute soliloquy at the end of, I guess it was episode 7 that aired last Sunday night. And then he was so emotional talking about what made him push so hard that he just said break at the end of it. And I know they stopped a few times in the multiple interviews. To me, that was, I want more. I want to hear that because we have never heard that. And rarely do we hear that from a great athlete a couple of decades removed with full perspective on what I did, what it meant to me, and really with no regard for I've got to protect this or that relationship along the way. Sure, there are critics, and understandably so, about know some control of it, having Michael as being a part of it. For this case, I'll take that little bit of it's not the complete unauthorized autobiography, if you will, and I'll take what we're getting because we haven't gotten it. I don't know if we'll ever get it again from an athlete at that level.
Mike, in just the moment that I have left, among the many things that you've done at NBC, of course, is and here for years, is college football. Is it your expectation that we will see a college football season this fall?
Yeah, that's the one, I think, Mike, that is a little concerning because the colleges have to make decisions. We were just talking in the break. Schools like Stanford, Northwestern that are on the quarter system, they have time. The schools like Michigan, like Syracuse, like Miami, those schools, they're getting to class in late August. So the clock starts ticking pretty soon if you're going to have an infrastructure ready for on-campus instruction. I believe on-campus instruction will be linked together with returning to campus. I also know the economics of this are so huge for the entirety of intercollegiate athletics. We're going to see a different model. We saw Akron drop three teams the other day. So college football is the one that I have the most concern about at this point coming back because of the numbers and the campus situation.
Mike Tirico again this weekend, the TaylorMade Driving Relief Charity Skins Match supported by United Health Group. It's great to see you, my man. Thank you very much. We'll watch
Same
this
here,
weekend.
Pal. All the best.
That's great. Mike Tirico with us here. All right. We have much more to do as we get up with you this morning. Sean Payton lost a year over a scandal. Coming up, you'll hear why a former Steeler said something that set him off yesterday. Don't miss this next.
Hello. This is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up with, I think, potentially a very important
NFL
story.
Draft. The Miami Dolphins select Tua Tagovailoa.
a very important story from the National Football League, which is not involved Tua Tagovailoa. We're going to segue off of this one here, guys, if we can, to James Harrison. So James Harrison was on the Barstool Sports Going Deep podcast, saying that Mike Tomlin gave him an envelope after Harrison's huge hit on the Browns' Muhammad Massaquah, which resulted in a significant fine. The NFL has not commented so far. The Steelers president has, saying, "I'm very certain nothing like this ever happened. I have no idea why James would make a comment like this, but there's simply no basis for believing anything like this." Saints head coach Sean Payton, you may recall, was suspended for the entire 2012 season as a result of the Bountygate scandal. He had a strong reaction to Harrison's comments.
If people are waiting for the league to investigate that, they shouldn't hold their breath. I think, you know, what took place with us back in 2011 in so many ways was a sham. And yet there wasn't a lot we could do with it. You know, the players were vindicated, but from a league or a coaching standpoint, there's no union, there's no representation. But I would be shocked if that'll be something that's tucked away or under the rug at Park Avenue. They'll look into it briefly. Listen, don't get me started on that.
We're going to get you back in the doghouse, Coach.
In salary. You know, honestly, something I'll never truly get over, because I know how it was handled and how it was run and the reasons behind it. And that's just the truth.
All right, and so there's a Sean Payton who's clearly still angry about all of that. And Lewis and Field and Bobby are back with us. I want to make sure it's clear in the setup here what it is we're talking about. James Harrison telling Barstool Sports Going Deep podcast that his then coach, Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, gave him, quote, an envelope after the big hit, was sort of a big deal at the time, on Muhammad Massaquah that knocked Massaquah out, and Harrison wound up getting suspended significantly. So, Lewis, how big a deal is this in the context of what we're going on here? We touched on this earlier. Feels like a big deal now because football's in a very different place than it was when this took place and certainly when you played. So what do you think happens now?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we talked about earlier, Greeny, I think the NFL will look into and try and get to the bottom of very quickly what exactly did happen and what exactly was James referring to when he said that Coach Tomlin gave him an envelope, and if there's anything more to that. I think it's dangerous and it's unfair at this point to make that kind of accusation or to put that kind of information out there without hearing from Mike Tomlin, and for right now to really be talking about this without even hearing what Mike Tomlin has to say about this, because, I mean, naturally people are going to go ahead down that road and say, well, is this another Bountygate type of issue? Was Mike Tomlin promoting a pay for injury type of situation in Pittsburgh? And that's a very dangerous, explosive accusation to make. And as I've said before, look, the game is a very physical, violent football game, where the difference between a physical hit and a dirty hit, or what people would perceive a dirty hit, is really a matter of inches, and things can change very quickly in the course of a football game. So I think right now, for James Harrison to kind of open that box once again, that would imply that maybe there were coaches who were paying players in order, you know, to injure other players and cross the line. That's a very explosive, dangerous thing that the league doesn't want to contend with right now. They're going to need to get to the bottom of it very quickly, given the fact that they've tried so hard to go ahead and change the narrative and change the culture surrounding physical play in the NFL. And that's not something that they want to be dealing with right now.
No, I agree with you completely. And I think one of the things we need clarity on is, what does he mean by gave him an envelope? Is he saying, as you are suggesting, Lewis, and I think most people assumed, that he was giving him an envelope for knocking a player out of a game? Or could he have been saying he gave him an envelope to pay for the fine that Harrison got as a result of it? Neither one of them is necessarily okay. So, Field, where does it go from here?
Well, Greeny, I think there's something that's very important that the league has to do. And it has to be vigilant. It cannot be selectively vigilant, because that is the tightrope that the league is going to walk if all of a sudden this just goes away without much more than a whimper, right? And I think that Sean Payton's comments on radio are kind of reflective of the dynamic that we are dealing with. We now have James Harrison's word against the word of Art Rooney II. James Harrison saying he got an envelope, Art Rooney II saying, "I have no idea what James is talking about." The league must investigate this. And if at the end of the investigation they find out that James Harrison's comments had no merit, That's fine. But what you have to do is you have to be vigilant in this situation, because one thing the NFL has struggled with in the court of public opinion is its inconsistencies with handing out punishments for a variety of different issues. Some days it seems like the NFL is ruling with an iron fist, and other days it feels like it doesn't necessarily have a plan. So the NFL must be vigilant here and take these comments from James Harrison very seriously. And if proven otherwise, good. That's the end point of the investigation. But for now, they can't just say, oh, well, Art Rooney II says no big deal. We're going to take him at his word. The NFL must dig deep into these comments.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think that's right. And if you know the people in New Orleans, they've never stopped being mad about the way that was handled. And you heard it right there from Sean Payton. So, Bobby, what do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, there were gift cards to some restaurant in that envelope. There was obviously something in there. And here's the problem. You know, James Harrison, you get in a podcast, you start talking, you get relaxed on radio, and sometimes maybe you speak a little further than you should. So there's no surprise that Mr. Rooney comes out and shuts it down right now. I would not be surprised if they circle back around on this and say that, you know, he misspoke, there was some misinformation come out, a misunderstanding about the question, because these things definitely used to happen in the league. It happened back when I was playing in 2006 until probably about 2009, 10, 11, when then it started to get phased out right after Bountygate. Coaches didn't want to be tied to this. They didn't want to lose their salary. And a lot of the older coaches, though, that was a pivot for them where they had to actually change the way that they were doing things, the way they were operating. They weren't paying for guys to get hurt. It was mostly for big hits and for big plays.
And very quickly, Lewis, I have just 30 seconds here, but clearly we'll have to hear from Mike Tomlin, right? I mean, that's where this begins, is someone's going to have to ask Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, look, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm wanting to go ahead and say a few words about this issue right now. I wouldn't really be waiting for anybody to call me. I'd be calling you. I'd be calling the people to get up saying, let me get on your show real quick and really explain to you exactly what was going on back then so we can go ahead and put this to bed, because I don't want my character and my reputation being dragged through the mud based on what somebody said in a he said type of situation. Look, this is a physical, violent game that we play. Everybody knows that. Most people don't want to accept that, but everybody knows that. And players are coached right up until, you know, within the rules to play right up until that line, and but don't cross it. And Mike Tomlin is no different than any other coach that has performed and coached his teams to a very high level and a very high standard of play. I wouldn't want my character being assassinated without me taking the going on the offensive as far as really defending myself. And I would expect Mike Tomlin to make a statement here soon, or the Steelers overall to go ahead and defend themselves vigorously, as they've already started to do.
Me too. I would agree. All right, guys. Very well done. It's a very interesting, and I think in the big picture, very important story. Meanwhile, to baseball, where they have a very important situation going on, because right now they are in the middle of negotiating with the players union, trying to work out a deal to start this 2020 season in the middle of the pandemic. In an interview with CNN last night, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, sounded optimistic about putting a deal together.
I think that whenever there's a discussion about economics, publicly people tend to characterize it as a fight. Me personally, I have great confidence that we'll reach an agreement with the Players Association, both that it's safe to come back to work and work out the economic issues that need to be resolved. At the end of the day, however, if there's, you know, players with either health conditions or just their own personal doubts, we would never force them or try to force them to come back to work. They can wait until they feel they're ready to come.
And here's my old buddy Buster Olney, who's back with me here. Buster, what message is Rob Manfred trying to get across yesterday?
Greeny, he's trying to build momentum toward a deal. He's heard the skepticism of the union leadership. He heard the skepticism of Blake Snell, who I think his view reflects the feelings of a lot of players. And he's heard from the White House, which is imploring him, play, let's go. And he's working for owners who stand to lose tens of millions of dollars. So there's a lot of pressure on Rob, who historically has been a great deal maker. Since he took over the negotiations for Major League Baseball, they haven't had a strike. They haven't had a labor stoppage. So I think this is him trying to build up some momentum, express some optimism, and push toward making a deal.
Now, you just mentioned Blake Snell. I want to play those comments that he made the other day for those who've not necessarily heard them, because what we are learning is that he spoke for a lot of players when he said this.
Y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me.
He ain't lying. He's right. Hey, bro, he's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snell, man. He has a beast, too.
All right, so strong comments from Snell, strong defense from Bryce Harper, who's arguably the biggest star in the sport. Buster, you and I spoke on your podcast earlier this week about the concerns that we share about just the optics of this. And right now, I feel like that is an important piece of this. What are your concerns?
Yeah, 100%. Now, you're right. Other players are backing him, but I also got reaction from agents, from players, little Homer Simpson, don't, after it, Blake Snell said that out loud. Because in the current context in this country, over 30 million people having lost their jobs, people are not going to want to hear players talk about money. People who have access to money complaining about not having access to more money, that's a message that's not going to go over well. And that's why it wouldn't surprise me if this was almost like a learning lesson, something to learn from the players moving forward. Look, it's okay to have feelings about the money. They're talking about it behind closed doors. But to talk about it out loud just doesn't help the players.
Yes, or anyone, candidly. If this thing doesn't happen because they can't figure out a way to do it safely, then fine. No one in their right minds would have any complaint about that. But if it does break up over money, I think that will make a lot of people really upset. Buster, you're my man. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. I got something else to get to you here, and that is Sunday night. Episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance will premiere starting at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, the final episodes. And in part of it, Michael Jordan will share the special relationship he had with one of their security guards, Gus Lett.
When people around, they think they're entitled to certain things, Gus would put them straight. That was Gus. He was a protector. But he was more than that. And I saw him for being more than that.
At that time, Michael, he was hurt about his dad. He still had a hard time with his death. And we would call him crying at 2 o'clock in the morning. Gus would get up and go to him. He would get up and go to see about him. He was there for his whatever he needed. He was there to take care of him.
When my father got killed, he became like a father figure to me. And I had to have him next to me everywhere I went.
This is going to be something else. Sunday night, the final two episodes of Last Dance, starting 9 o'clock Eastern, the uncensored version on ESPN and the ESPN app. The edited for mature language version will be on ESPN2, and we will have a three-hour special, Get Up Monday Morning, reacting to it all. Meanwhile, we're not done here this morning yet. Drew Brees isn't playing forever. So who is the heir to that throne in New Orleans? We'll explain next. Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
With the fifth pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the Miami Dolphins select Tua Tagovailoa.
Man, this has been a dream growing up. Being able to go out there and represent my family in a Dolphins jersey, it's a blessing.
So with Tua now signed, sealed, and delivered the first-round pick in Miami, the biggest questions surrounding the quarterback, of course, are all about his injury history. And so the Dolphins go into this coming season with an interesting decision, sit him or start him. And that's going to bring us to some required reading this morning out of the Florida Sun Sentinel, where it is written, quote, if the doctors say Tagovailoa can play, and that's all we heard from his camp leading into the draft, there's no reason Tagovailoa should simply be told to sit in the corner until next year. Not the fifth pick in the draft. Not a guy with that talent. Sorry, no way. The plan should be for him to compete for the job immediately. He's hopefully competing now against Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen, at least virtually. He should be impressing, too, if everything about him rings true. Fascinating. So here are two guys who know all about this kind of thing, Lewis Riddick and Mike Tannenbaum. Lewis, I'll start with you. What do you agree or disagree? Start Tua if he seems ready.
Look, that sounds great in theory, but I think, look, you really need to take a slow and steady approach and play the long game here with Tua, because despite the fact that, you know, everyone deemed him as being healthy heading into this draft, and that's why his stock did not fall, the fact of the matter is this. It goes beyond just his health. It goes beyond what is best for the player long term. And what's best for the player is to sit and learn this new offense behind, you know, that's going to be playing and really going to be being executed with an offensive line that is going to have basically three or four new starters in it in a season where you're not going to have any offseason at all. And we all know that offensive football in particular is so nuanced and really needs the most amount of time to really get up to speed, that really it just is the smart decision to go ahead and let him go ahead and develop nice and slowly and unveil him in 2021, a la what the Kansas City Chiefs did with Pat Mahomes. I don't think anyone right now would say this, that Tua is any more advanced or any more ready to play than Pat Mahomes was coming out of college from a physical perspective. And we see what happened with him as far as sitting behind a veteran, taking the slow and steady approach in a normal offseason, and what that did for him when he was finally unveiled in his second season. So why wouldn't you take the same approach with Tua? Look, if it ultimately comes down to this, that he is just head and shoulders above Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen, to the point where it's not even, that it's almost laughable as far as the difference is concerned, as far as their performance is concerned, then go ahead and maybe, I guess, then consider putting him in there. But right now, I would need to be convinced that we have a good reason to put him in there, more so than trying to rush him in there and potentially risking damaging his development for the future. I just would not do that.
Mike T, you were the GM in Miami up until quite recently. How do you see it?
Similar to Lewis, and here's why. They really don't even know where he is because of this unusual offseason. So day one, he comes into the facility. They got to put a plan together, not just for this year, but for the next 10 years. So they really have to assess where he is from a conditioning standpoint, range of motion. Are there any other asymmetries in his body, which are very important because that could lead to other lower body injuries? So they have to put a comprehensive plan together to make sure that he's healthy. And he has to move down to South Florida, move his family there. There's an acclimation period. They're dealing from a position of strength because Ryan Fitzpatrick played very well for them last year. And Chan Gailey has been with Ryan Fitzpatrick before in their career. So there is no rush. And I think Patrick Mahomes, as Lewis alluded to, is a great analogy. Start off slow, get him a great foundation physically from an intangible standpoint. And then when he's ready to go, let him go. It doesn't have to be week one. It could be week 16, 17. It's so important that he plays well for them that time is really on their side, and Fitzpatrick gives them a chance to win right now.
All right, there's one other quarterback thing I want to ask both you guys about. I continue to find it fascinating what they're doing now and what they will do in the future in New Orleans, because the Saints have these backup options at quarterback, right? They got Taysom Hill, they got Jameis Winston. The starter is, of course, the Hall of Famer-to-be, Drew Brees, who is 41 years old. So one of these two guys feels like the potential replacement when Brees retires. Sean Payton recently shared these thoughts about the quarterbacks. He said, it gives us a Hall of Fame quarterback playing still at an elite level, and then two young prospects we're excited about, starting with Taysom Hill. When that time comes, and that'll probably be at some point sooner and later, and Drew decides to retire, I see Taysom being a guy that has a great chance to come in there and become that quarterback. Quickly, Lewis, are you buying that Taysom Hill is the heir apparent to Drew Brees?
I'm buying it because that's what Sean is saying, and that's what Sean told me personally at the Combine this year when we interviewed him on the set of NFL Live. I asked him, for someone who has 13 career regular season pass attempts, are you saying that you really do believe, based on what you have seen in OTAs and mini camps and training camps and then during practices during the season, are you saying and you truly do believe that he could be a starting quarterback? And he looked me right in the eye and said, without a doubt, he thinks he has all the things, both physically and mentally, to be able to play in his offense at a very, very high level. Now, from the outside looking in, and we don't have the benefit of that kind of information, meaning we haven't seen him in OTAs, in mini camps, and in training camp practices, and in the meeting room and on the practice field, we're going to be naturally going to be skeptical. But Sean was very, very adamant over the fact that he has belief in Taysom as a starting quarterback. So until proven otherwise, I'm going to go with his opinion.
How do you see it, Mike T?
Yeah, I see this really differently. There's a great expression.
Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead, Mike.
Yep. You go by what you see. He's thrown six passes last year. He's 31 years old. And if Sean Payton really believed that this guy was the heir apparent and he has such a great upside, why they signed Jameis Winston? I understand Winston was opportunistic, but if he only threw six passes last year, I'm very skeptical. He's also playing the role of the general manager here, trying to increase trade value possibly down the road. But I'm very skeptical of this. I think his window's closing as a quarterback, even though his offensive snaps are going up. I just don't see him as a future quarterback based on a very limited sample set and the fact that he's over 30 years of age.
Yep, I've described myself as sort of the last man on the Jameis Winston mountain here. I got 15 seconds, Lewis. I'm saying Jameis Winston is the heir apparent in New Orleans. You buy it or not?
No, I'm not buying it because I'll tell you what. I do like Jameis. I do believe he went to the exact place that he needed to go to. But Sean told me this face-to-face, and I'm going to believe him, you know, until proven otherwise, that Taysom is his guy. So we're going to see.
All right. We'll all find out together. Guys, thank you so much. Outstanding work today, and have a wonderful weekend. Meanwhile, this Monday morning, so coming up on Monday, we're asking you to get up earlier with us because we're going to do it with you. A special three-hour get-up coming off the finale of Last Dance on Sunday night. We start 7 a.m. Eastern talking Michael Jordan with you right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Disney Plus. All of your favorites, all in one place. Sign up today. And I'll tell you what I'll sign up for. To be honest with you, a weekend that has some sports in it. It may not be everything that we're always accustomed to, but if you're a soccer fan, they're playing soccer in Germany. The Bundesliga will return this weekend. If you're a racing fan, there's NASCAR action for you this weekend. If you're a golf fan like me, the Skins game will be played this weekend. We'll be able to see some of the biggest stars in the sport, including Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson. And then if you enjoy UFC, the fights are tomorrow night again here on ESPN. So it all of it feels like just a little ray of hope, a little bit of sports. And right now, I'll take it. I hope you will, too. Thanks for spending this week with us. It's been a wonderful ride, and we will see you again on Monday morning for a three-hour special. Enjoy it. First Take starts now.